Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
For the record, yes! KD will soar in with a right-hand spike. Klay Thompson, three.
Welcome to the Warriors Insider Podcast on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Golden State Warriors Insider, Monty Poole.
Welcome to the Warriors Insider Podcast on NBC Sports Bay Area, brought to you by Wendy's. I am your host, Monty Poole, and I'm here today with Warriors assistant coach and scout and, well, any other titles that he may have collected along the past few years, Mr. Chris DeMarco. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me, Monty.
First of all, I got to ask you now, you guys are obviously just coming off the NBA Finals and four-game sweep. How important, or how did it feel, first of all, to win? And second of all, how did it feel to win in a sweep?
To win, obviously, unbelievable feeling. I don't know so much the sweep. Like, I mean, how many games they won, if that really matters as much. Just to be able to do it, and especially after how hard it was this year and after the Houston series, to get it done in Cleveland was pretty incredible. Where we won our first one, so
the feeling I got after winning, after they won games one and two, is that they definitely wanted to sweep. And then when the Warriors won game three behind Kevin Durant's superhuman performance, I think I knew that they wanted to close it out in Cleveland. And that it was important to them to do it that way. I think part of it was just they wanted to get the season over with as soon as possible, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's always your goal to win every game. And so, yeah, I'd assume everyone wanted to get it done in Cleveland. But, again, it was just and Andre coming back and contributing was pretty awesome. And it's just there's no words for it, especially winning 3 in 4 years. What that's like.
Now you, what I really wanted to get you on was the Houston stuff, because that's your scout. I mean, that's the team that you look at and have been scouting for what, 3 years maybe?
Yeah, around there, yeah.
Yeah, so take us into, as much as you can at least, the mindset and what you, with Houston, how did you pull that off? Because obviously it's a very tough series. What did you see that you can tell us that may have helped or, you know, may have helped you guys almost lose the series? No, may have helped you win the series.
No, first off, like, no matter who scout it is, everybody's contributing. You bring, if it's your team that you're preparing for, you bring it to the rest of the coaching staff and we all get together and knock it out together, put the game plan out together. With Houston specifically, obviously, with how they play, which is only playing one center and then going to that five-guard lineup, there's some challenges to that just because it's not something that you're used to guarding. Usually
right.
When you're guarding five guys, there's at least one player sort of around the hoop, at least in that area. And your rotations, when it's just five guards out there, are a little bit different. So it takes some time to adjust to that. And then, obviously, after a few games with Andre going out, now you're playing with different lineups and all that as well.
So much was made of Houston's improved defense and the way that the Rockets switched against you guys and against most everybody they saw. What kind of difficulties did that defense actually pose for you guys?
No matter who you're playing, you're going to see a different look from each team, obviously. And that's one of Houston's strengths and how they built their team is being able to switch like that. I think our guys did a good job of trying to figure out ways to attack it as the series went on. Against the switching defense specifically, it's usually going to be the slips out of the ball screens, mm-hmm. and also off the ball screens, just kind of causing some confusion between those guys who are planning on switching who they're guarding. So anytime you can get some sprint into it or any type of movement, it's to your advantage on the offense. That's kind of how we created some of those open looks.
Yeah, it seemed to get better as the series went along, and obviously it worked pretty well in game 6 and 7. You guys were down 3-2, and I think always felt that you would still find a way to come back and win that series. But what I'm looking at now is, wondering about at least, is what do you take from all the discussion and debate around Kevin Durant's ISO stuff? I mean, from my point of view, a lot of it appeared to be something that benefited you guys and was almost necessary in that series. But, of course, there's the other side of people saying, well, that's not the way the Warriors play. How did you how do you see that thing shaking out, just the way it was diagrammed and the way it played out?
Yeah, I guess I don't understand that in a way, just because, especially in the playoffs, with the way teams are locked in, it does turn more into an ISO basketball game anyways. And with Kevin's talents and, I mean, our strength as a team, I don't think we were doing anything differently than what we've always done. We tried to take advantage of mismatches here and there, but for the most part, especially with teams switching, it turns into that kind of game. And Kevin's the best in the NBA at scoring like that. But again, I mean, we know we've had a switching defense for years now, and that's why we do it. You know, it's difficult at times, but you do need the personnel and the right players to fit into that kind of defensive scheme.
Yeah. You know, I watched Kevin, and I thought, again, players often say, you know, take what the defense gives you. And I thought in that series against the Rockets, the one thing the defense kind of gave you guys fairly consistently, at least early, was Kevin's isolation, because they really didn't have anybody who could effectively shut that off. And when you're in a situation like you guys were in, where you've got Kevin and you look over there and you say, well, who's going to stop him? Doesn't it make it a little bit more conducive to trying to go to that, to utilize that?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know if that there's many guys just one-on-one who can stop Kevin in the NBA. I mean, he's so talented. But I think there was just too much made of that. But, I mean, why wouldn't there be? Like, everybody's watching the series and everybody's going to have their opinion on what they see, and it just kind of ended up like that. But I think, again, like, I don't think it was much different from how we played, which is just trying to take what the defense gives you and take advantage of what we think will help us offensively.
Yeah, yeah. And you come into the finals, and in the first very – in game one, you see that J.R. Smith rolls into Klay Thompson. And, I mean, you work pretty closely with Klay quite a bit still. And, first of all, tell me, when you first saw that happen, you saw Klay go down like that, what crossed your mind? And kind of take me through what followed in the hours and days to come after that happened.
Yeah, I think – sometimes it's hard to see from where we are on the bench exactly what happened, but just you kind of can tell from other people's reactions, and then you see the replay again, and it didn't look great. So I can't remember exactly what I was thinking, but with Klay, he loves to play, and he's so tough that mm-hmm. you can't just count him out. So I don't think anybody on the bench was like, hey, oh, he's done. You know, he's done for the series or he's done for the year. I think we just had a wait-and-see approach, and you get right back into the game. You still got to play the game. And once he came back out and got back out there, you knew he was going to be good for the series. But he's just such a tough player. And biggest thing with Klay is he just loves to hoop. And there's no way he was going to miss any of those games.
Yeah, I mean, and Klay admitted that, you know, that the thing hurt like hell, even as he played through the came back in game one, second quarter, and played in games 2, 3, and 4. You know, and I mean, David West said Klay probably shouldn't even have played at all. And other guys were saying, you know, you look at the way his ankle was and what he was unable to do on off days and stuff, and thinking that maybe he would have had a hard time playing. How limited was he on non-game days?
I think you guys saw probably as well as we did. I think he was limping around. It didn't feel great, but once you can get loose and the adrenaline gets going, and it's probably a better question for him, but I think, again, he just wants to be out there, and even if it's just what he brings with his movement and staying in the perimeter and how defenses have to play him, it's still going to benefit us as a team. If he can play on it, I know there's plenty of injuries out there where it's just you can't play on it. It's just unplayable. I mean, you can ask Andre, but with Clay, he felt like, okay, like I can still get out there and contribute. I'm going to. And I'm sure David West, I mean, he's a tough guy himself. So, it's pretty incredible what he was able to do.
No, yeah, all the guys talked about how much toughness that it required for Clay to keep playing despite that injury, because it was obviously there. And like you said, he was limping around. I know on one of the days, I think it was at shoot-around, and he's walking around not even in basketball shoes. He's walking around in shower shoes, you know. And so when you see a guy who is walking around in shower shoes on shoot-around, you're thinking, ugh, you know, it can't be good. But yet the game starts, and like you say, the adrenaline kicks in. All of a sudden, he's out there bombing threes. So I think more than anything else, it's a testament to Clay's toughness. And now you've been around him. Like I said, you work with him quite a bit. What have you seen in his evolution from when you first came to the Warriors and he was a kid to where he is now, where he's really a fairly mature NBA star?
Yeah, I think it's experience more than anything, and just his work ethic. I think early on, you know, he didn't get to the paint as much. He didn't finish around the rim as much, and he's really added that to his game. And on top of that, just the timely rebounding and obviously defensively consistently checking the best playmaker on the other team. It just kind of all evolved for him. And I think as he saw more of how teams were playing him and defending him, he added in just moving off the ball and setting screens for his big guys to get open, just other things. But a lot of it is just really how hard he works on his game, and then just that experience of playing in so many basketball games, as well as like games in the playoffs that matter, like the pressure games. And, you know, he has a knack for stepping up big time in games with high pressure.
You've seen him, you know, you saw the 37-point quarter, the 60-point game. And I always tell people that, you know, Steph's a great shooter, but that when Clay gets hot, no one in the league, including Steph, can get hotter. You know what I mean? It's like he zones in on something, and when he gets it going in those on those roles like that, I don't care who you are, you can't out-hot Clay Thompson when he's on fire. Am I wrong?
You're probably right. I think his size helps him too. With him being able to get a shot off and a quick release. And I mean, it'd be interesting to see if Steph played more off the ball and we had a different guard in the game trying to get Steph coming off screens.
Sure.
If he could get in that kind of zone. But yeah, it's kind of what Clay does. He gets in that zone and it doesn't matter. He doesn't even have to see the rim. And it's got a chance of going in.
I mean, think about it. He scored 60 points on 11 dribbles. It's like, who does that, you know?
That game, that says as much about our team, too, though, the fact that he only had to dribble 11 times. Like, these guys found him in the perfect spots, like the screening. I mean, it's just it's incredible all the way around.
Tremendous.
It's still just such an insane stat to score 60 and 11 dribbles.
Yeah, 29 minutes. Crazy.
I can't wait to spend some quality time with my son fishing this year, teaching him about casting, how to choose bait, set the hook, and how to be safe on the water by always wearing a life jacket. Save the ones you love. A message from California State Parks Division of Boating and Waterways.
Another thing I want to add, you're the coach who was held over from the Mark Jackson period. And I've always wondered kind of, you know, what kind of lies and did you have to tell Steve Kerr to persuade him that you should be on the staff? What was it like?
It was just, there's a lot going on during that time. Obviously, they had the coaching search going on. They had a few guys come in here and there where I would be there to help them work out, and that was kind of the purpose of keeping somebody on. But Steve was awesome from day one. Like, I met him. We had a hour and a half talk just about basketball. And a few days later, he said he wanted to keep me on. So, I mean, I obviously can't thank him enough for that. And I'm obviously very grateful to Mark Jackson, too, and what I learned from those 2 years as well. But it's just, yeah, Steve, from day one, made me feel comfortable. And it was never weird that I was on a staff before.
Yeah, never felt that staff. Way. I mean, and from the outside, it never looked that way. It always looked like it was a pretty seamless move, you know. You just, different boss, but same job. But your job has also changed in the last 3 or 4 years. Talk about where you started, you know, video stuff, and where you started to where you are now.
Yeah, so I just started as an intern video coordinator, and it's kind of what you have to do to enter the NBA. If you didn't play in the NBA and you don't have a name, you have to go through the video room, and anybody who wants to get into this type of work should do it. Like, that first year is just a crash course of NBA terminology, what player development's like, just what the NBA game is like. It's phenomenal what you can learn in just that 1 year. And then from there, I went on full-time as an assistant video coordinator. And then when Steve came on my third year, I got into an advanced scouting role.
Mm-hmm.
And you hear advanced scouting, it sounds like you're just looking at college players and you just get a title that makes you sound like you've been doing it a while. But the advanced scouting is more of a coach's role. So you work with the assistant coaches and you go watch other teams play. So if we're playing the Chicago Bulls in a week, I'll go see the Bulls play twice, write down their play calls, what sets they like to run the most, and then just communicate that to our assistant. So then when our assistant coach goes to present the Bulls to our team the day of the game, he has an idea of, okay, this is what we're going to see, and this is how we're going to guard it. So it's kind of another thing to build on that video experience.
Right.
Where you're kind of learning the NBA game to now, okay, I'm seeing it live, and I'm trying to understand, like, what these teams are trying to do. And so you continue to just grow and kind of get a feel for what would be expected if you moved into that assistant coaching role. And then after that third year, Alvin Gentry went over to the Pelicans. So there was an assistant coach opportunity, job that opened up. So that's kind of how I advanced to that position. And this is the end of my third year doing it. So.
Enjoying it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's nothing like your job being to go into the gym and work with some of the best players in the world and, you know, a great staff. And with the success we've had, it's obviously been just fantastic. But you also know going forward, it's not always going to be like this, but just enjoy it while you're in it.
You know, you talk about going from the video room to the coaching seat, and a number of coaches have done that. I mean, Eric Spoelstra comes to mind in Miami, and I think Eric is generally considered one of the top 5 or 6 coaches in the NBA. I mean, as someone who is familiar with how he got to where he got to, I mean, I would think that a guy like you would have an appreciation of a guy who has come up through that path from the video room all the way to the coaching box. And what do you think of Eric and maybe the fact that he's just been able to do that and do it so well? I mean, he's won a couple of rings.
No, he's a great guy to look up to in terms of how he's grown and continued to improve on his career. And we've got one here in Mike Brown. He started in the video room too.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had talks like that. And I think in recent years, it's more, I don't know, probably the video room has probably gained a little bit more respect in terms of how people around the NBA see it, because there are a lot of guys now who have kind of grown from that spot and had some success in the NBA. So I think it's starting to get to that point where people are noticing that the video room is a great place to start and you can find some real talent in there. And we've got a lot of good guys here, even in the past, who have moved on and that are here right now, who I think are going to be good coaches in the years to come.
Really?
Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, just going down, I'm trying to think of some of the guys. I mean, the person I was an intern with, Samson Coyote, he's a director with Team USA. He helps pick those under under 18 teams for USA. So,
right.
You know, he's doing well. I mean, C.O. Robertson went to the Lakers and
right.
then to Cal. We've got Brian Ormandy. He went to the New Orleans Pelicans. He's there. You know, we got some guys in there right now, James Laughlin, Khalid Robinson, Luke Laux, who, you know, they continue to grow and, you know, they're working guys out on the floor and starting to get some scouts coming up here next season. So, again, it's just we've had a ton of success in our video room, and it's, you know, you're proud of that, especially, you know, coming from there.
You're listening to the Warriors Insider Podcast. I'm Monty Poole with my guest, Chris DeMarco, assistant coach of the Warriors. We are brought to you by Wendy's. Why don't you go out and get a taste of the Southwest with Wendy's new Southwest Avocado Chicken Sandwich and Southwest Avocado Chicken Salad. Bold Southwest flavors topped with cool, creamy avocado, but only available for a limited time in Wendy's. Now that you've been in the NBA for, I guess, is it 5 years now? Six years?
Yeah. Next year will be seven, yeah.
Yeah. Is it at all like you pictured it, or did you walk in wide-eyed and just said, let's see what happens? I mean, how did – just go back to when you first came into the league and how you look at it now.
I can't even remember, to be honest. It's just – it's a blur. But I do know, like, that first – when I first came in, I just did not have a clue. I mean, I played basketball my whole life. My father was a coach. I felt like I had a good idea of my knowledge of the game, and it's nothing like what you expect, but it's also exciting. And it's like learning a whole nother sport, being around like great basketball minds and really, really good basketball players. And you just continue to learn, and it's amazing. I remember my first year. Every team's different with the interns and how they pay interns, but I was living in San Francisco and I had been in data storage right out of college while I was in grad school. So actually to be able to afford my apartment in San Francisco, I was still working a little bit for this tech company and I was bartending, while being an intern for that whole year, just to be able to afford to pay rent. So I've always appreciated that first year probably the most. Just because it was just so difficult to get my foot in the door, and then everything that came after that.
You were the team's summer league coach last summer. As a summer league coach, what is your main goal? What's your priority, and how do you look at that job in terms of, okay, when you go to Las Vegas, you're thinking, here's what I want to get done. And what was on your to do list?
I think the first thing is probably just you don't have enough time to get the team playing the exact same way in terms of what you want offensively and defensively like we do with our regular team. But you do want guys to share the ball and trust their teammates. So the first thing is probably just making sure everyone knows that we want them to play together. And everybody's out there to prove themselves. They're all looking for contracts. They want to get to the next level. But, the scouts are smart and coaches are smart, and they're going to look at you and see that you're trying to do too much. So the first thing is just to establish kind of that togetherness on both ends of the floor and try to beat teams by being, strong together. And secondly, it's just you want to give your young players a chance to kind of show what they can do, because they all have roles during the regular season within this team. And then you go to summer league and they can take on a bigger role, whether it's leadership or ball handling or maybe taking more perimeter shots. Whatever it is, they have a chance to kind of show, okay, like this is what I've been working on, and show that to us.
So when you last year you had Jordan Bell in Las Vegas, and
yeah,
what did you think of him before summer league? I mean, did you see much of him before that? And just what did you think as you watched him operate during that session in Vegas?
Yeah, I don't watch a ton of college hoops, but I definitely watched during March, and I just remember him impacting the game. For Oregon, whether it was shot blocking or steals, or just had that energy. I knew a little bit about him, but he's just a guy who can – he does those little things, and he plays with energy, and he did that at Summer League too. whether it was blocking shots or putback dunks or getting in passing lanes. And it's just these little things that, some of them aren't going to show up in the box score that he brings. And he's just a dynamic player. And so I definitely saw that, and we did as a staff this last summer league.
Yeah, I watched Jordan a little bit, same as you, a little bit with Oregon. And I thought, you know, just a pretty good athlete, and he seems to like playing defense. And you don't always see that. You know, a lot of times
you don't.
They want to come out, they want to score, you know, and he didn't seem to really – scoring seemed to be secondary to him, and it still appears that way. What do you think of his progress over the course of the season? Because he started off really well, and then he hit a little bit of a dip and got hurt, and I think he got a little bit of the – I think he was impressed with himself for a little while there and had to kind of be turned around a little bit. And by the end, by the postseason, it appeared that he had kind of turned that corner and kind of gotten back on track as someone who knew he was a rookie, knew he had a lot to learn, but still had something to offer.
Yeah, I mean, I agree in terms of just – it just proves with the Houston and Cleveland series how impactful he can be. And I just think you have to look at that as, wow, he had a really successful rookie season. He definitely helped us win a championship. And I think it's exciting with him, just with his potential to see going forward what kind of player he can become. And he's got great people to look up to, obviously, around the team. And I think Draymond's somebody who can really kind of mold his game off of, somebody that can guard multiple positions and rebound and block shots. And you know, Jordan is a better passer than I think most people realize, too.
No, he is a good passer. I've seen him, you know, not just the between the legs pass to Steph in the short corner either. I mean,
what about the shooter behind his head one? That was a bad.
Exactly. I mean, he has actually, I would say he has a gift for making the creative pass and making it accurately. You know, a lot of guys can make it, but they don't do it accurately all the time. And he actually is pretty good with his passes for the most part, you know. Can't get better because he's so young and so new to the game in terms of not just the NBA, but, I mean, Jordan wasn't playing a lot of basketball when he was 8, 9, 10, 11 years old. He was about football and stuff, and basketball came late to him. I think people don't always understand that, and I tell them all the time. I said, he didn't really like basketball until he was in high school. And for a lot of guys, when they get to high school, they're already, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years into organized basketball, and not him. So he's still coming.
It's interesting, yeah.
When you look at a guy like Jordan or a guy like Patrick, a guy like Loon, the young guys, do you take, as a guy who played some basketball in college yourself, do you take sort of a sense of satisfaction in seeing them contribute to a winning mix, you might say?
Oh, absolutely. I think, like, anyone who's in this doing player development takes some pride in seeing these guys grow. What Pat overcame this year to play.
Wow. Yeah.
It's just unbelievable. And I don't think people understand Kevon Looney, like what he had to go through. I mean, he got injured basically in high school. I think in college as a freshman at UCLA, I don't even know that he practiced. I think he just played in games. He had a hip surgery on each hip. So this was basically his rookie year in terms of being on the floor and being able to help. So that's just 2 long years of being injured and just watching and watching and watching. And the guy never complained. He was never late, always on time, put in a ton of hours. And then for him to have some success this year and play such a large role for us in the playoffs is incredible.
Chris, you're a smart guy. You've been around basketball for much of your life. What do you see as the secrets to Steve Kerr's success as a coach?
He's authentic. He's authentic. Yeah, you know, like what you guys see in terms of him talking to you is just how he is around us. He's just very down to earth. He's very intelligent. He's excellent with his messaging. And you know, he's done an unbelievable job, obviously, with this team. And, again, like one word, he's just very genuine, authentic guy.
Yeah, you know, I think people, I get into this discussion with people all the time. They say, well, God, his job is so easy. He's got all that talent out there, and I have to remind them that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I have to remind them that, you know, when you coach talent, that's the hardest job of all. You know, and not just because there are egos involved, and there are, but because there are multiple egos involved. And, you know, people who say all the time, oh, the Warriors are so, they're so selfless, and I said they don't play with the ego. I said they have egos. Don't get it wrong. They have egos. Do not get that twisted. But they don't let their egos get in the way of the goal. And I think a lot of that comes back to not just the players and Steph. I think he's a big part of that, but also to Steve and the way he is able to sort of navigate issues that otherwise could be a little difficult for a coach who is a little less secure in himself and maybe a little less had a little less of a genuine touch as a human being.
Yeah, again, I when I hear that, I just can't believe it. I mean, we play over 100 games a year. There's just so many other things besides basketball that go on as well, and none of this is easy. And I mean, especially, you know, dealing with teams when we're talking, like trying to win back-to-back championships. And just his experience playing and just his intelligence really helped us. And, again, like his messaging and how genuine he is, I think guys feed off of that. And it's not talked about a lot, but just, you know, he's been struggling through some of those injuries and
and
that too. And, like, I mean, just to be able to show up is probably a challenge. And it's just incredible what he's done.
Last thing I wanted to ask you is we have, you know, you mentioned 100 games a season, and literally you have. You played, I think, 411 games over the last 4 years. It's a whole, a fifth season, you might say. 82-game season times five is 410. So do you feel that, and do the summers seem, the off-season seem increasingly shorter? Like they do for
that's
us.
That's a lot of suits and ties. That's a lot of outfits. You definitely feel it. I think you definitely feel it. But I'm sure other teams in the league, their staffs too, as players as well. I mean, everyone gets tired. The NBA seasons are long, but yeah, especially in the off season because you go right into summer league when you go to the finals. So, you know, you get a couple weeks, but then there's still the draft workouts and mm-hmm. draft. And then so where you find a little bit of time is right after summer league.
So, you have summer league, and that's the only time you have, really. After summer league is over, you got basically August, basically.
But, again, like, this is what you want. Like, this is what you want. This is what you work for. So I think anybody would tell you that they're okay with their offseasons getting cut short if this is the success that we're going to have.
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing. When you guys go to camp next season, I mean, for the most part, there's been something that has sort of pushed this team along its path in a given year. I mean, obviously, Steve's first year, you know, there was a taste of success the previous year under mm-hmm. previous couple of years under Mark, where you made it to the playoffs and to the second round in the first year and in 1 year, and then the following year lost in seven to the Clippers. To me, it appeared that what pushed that team in 2014-15 was just the newness of winning. You know, it was fun. And the way you guys were winning, a new style of play, there was a challenge there. And it appeared to me that drove this team and ended up in a championship. And then the following year, obviously, there was the offseason talk about how, well, you know, the Warriors, they won a championship, but they didn't beat the Spurs, they didn't play the Clippers, and you know, the Cavs were injured. Was it really a legitimate championship or not? There was all that talk. So they came out and said, okay, fine, and they destroyed people from the start. You know, they're 24-0 and 73-9. And they play with a certain fire that year, I thought, that was based on that. And then to lose in the finals, become the first team, the only team to lose a 3-1 lead in the finals. And obviously that, along with adding Kevin Durant, drove them in 2016-17. And so when they got to the playoffs last year, I thought to myself, they want to destroy people, and they were 15-0. They were one game away from a perfect postseason. Cleveland won game four in Cleveland, then the Warriors come home to game five, and they close it out. So they have the first 16-1 postseason in NBA history. This past year, I couldn't really put a finger on anything that really drove them. Clay said, well, the idea of being a dynasty, I talked to him about it, and he said that a lot of guys want to be mentioned among the best teams in NBA history. And to do that, you have to be consistently good over a long period of time. So that's always there for us. What's there for them next year?
Well, I think, just to be able to repeat, because we didn't get it done the first time. That second year when we lost to the Cavs, that was a chance to repeat. We didn't get it done. So this year, along with the dynasty, a chance to repeat. And then, next year again, how many teams have won three in a row? That probably has to be the focus next season. But again, we're just trying to enjoy this one right now. I'm sure we'll figure that out coming up whenever the time's right.
There you go. Chris DeMarco, Warriors assistant coach. Klay Thompson, sometimes personal coach. Someone who has been with the Warriors through both the Steve Kerr era and prior to that under Mark Jackson, and still earning his pay. I think it's somewhere between $2.5 million and $2.9 million a year, I think it is you're making. So let's keep that. Problem?
No, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm looking for an agent right now. available.
All right, CD, man.
Those are pretty good numbers.
Thanks for your time, brother, and we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Appreciate it, Monty.
All right, you've been listening to the Warriors Insider Podcast brought to you by Wendy's. If you haven't already, please visit Apple Podcasts or Google Play to subscribe. If you like our podcast, give us a rating and a review. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at NBCS Authentic. We'll be back next week with another great guest. Thanks for listening.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.